If you are at least 20 pounds overweight, you may be eligible to participate in Project Impact, a research study at Drexel University. This weight loss program is designed to help adults lose weight and keep it off without medication. Guidance from weight loss specialists at group meetings included. Project Impact is funded by the National Institutes of Health. Details at drexel.edu/weightloss or 215-553-7110. Drexel University supports WHYY.
In the face of growing fixed costs, the Philadelphia School District needs an additional $85 million in order to maintain existing services for the next school year. And those are services that Superintendent William Height says are woefully inadequate. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. In order to provide each student a high-quality education, Height has asked for $300 million from both the city and state. Soon facing its last meeting of the fiscal year, City Council met today to hash out what it intends to do to help city schools. WHYY senior education reporter Kevin McCrory was there and joins me now live with an update. So, Kevin, what does City and Council intend to do?
Well, let's say this to start, Dave. It's complicated, and in the end, the numbers are a source of contention. But here's what happened today. No bills were voted upon. Members gave a favorable recommendation to three measures that would raise new revenue. City property taxes would be increased by 4.5%. Use and occupancy taxes would be boosted a little bit. And the tax on parking would also see a hike. So in total, council says these measures would rake in $70 million for schools. The school district had been hoping that the city would find a way to deliver about $100 million.
Now, hold on. Didn't Mayor Michael Nutter have a plan to raise property taxes? Where does that stand?
Right. Nutter had been seeking a property tax increase about double what council called for today. That plan would have given the school district pretty much everything it asked for and then a little more. But council members felt this would be too much of a burden on city residents, so they decided to cut Nutter's number in half and partially supplement it in other ways.
Okay, so the bottom line, the way I'm reading it, is if you own property in the city, it became clear today that your bills are going up. Is that right?
Absolutely. There's no doubts there. But here's where it starts to get tricky. From the school district's point of view, there's actually another wrinkle here. The property tax hike will generate $50 million, but only half of that automatically goes to schools. Council controls the other half. Council leadership says it will give those funds to the district, but there may be strings attached. So essentially, based on today's action, council really only devoted $45 million to schools. And it can now say, hey, we've got another $25 million here for you. And if you do X, Y, and Z to our liking, maybe you can have it. Former Governor Tom Corbett did a similar thing to the school district in 2013, where he ended up withholding millions that drastically reduced the number of available school guidance counselors for the first 6 weeks of classes.
Lots of numbers, Kevin. Help me with the arithmetic. Does it all add up to the school district needing to make more cuts next year?
This is where it comes down to a little bit of a he said between Superintendent William Height and Council President Darrell Clark. Height is only counting the money that has been absolutely guaranteed to the district, which, yes, assuming no other aid, would cause more cuts. Clark counts the whole $70 million plus an additional $30 million he's betting on from the sale of commercial property tax liens. Both the district and the Nutter administration say it's not smart to bank on lien sales. The city hasn't done it for a while, and they say the projections at this point are really shaky. Clark insists that, though, count the lien sales, and you'll see that we have actually raised $100 million for schools today.
I'm not going to be drawn into a tit for tat with Dr. Height. We, again, have stepped to the plate, unlike any other stakeholder in this, and provided revenue for the school district. We are now exceeding the $400 million mark over the last 4 years.
So Height says only $45 million is guaranteed, not $100 million. So that means his team must begin to plan for more downsizing.
There's nothing left in the district to cut. So there's nothing left to cut, I mean, and because of all of the things that we've done to date. The only vehicle we would have, hypothetically, if we had to do this, was a class size increase. And a class size increase means layoffs.
Kevin, let's look to the West. How does the state budget battle in Harrisburg play into this?
It's huge, Dave. You know, Governor Wolf has proposed a proposed budget that would give the district $160 million in additional recurring funds. Republican leaders there in the House and Senate, they have their own priorities. So, you know, we could be in for a very long summer of negotiations in Harrisburg. And in the meantime, city and school officials, they'll be advocating there in Harrisburg. But they can, like I said, they can only count the money that's been absolutely guaranteed. And that means more cuts could be on the way if things are just the way they are right now.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Dave.
WHYY senior education reporter Kevin McCrory on Newsworks Tonight. Anti-abortion activists gathered at a Philadelphia cemetery today to praise and scorn the city's decision to quietly bury the remains of fetuses and babies that police found at Dr. Kermit Gosnell's abortion clinic in 2013. That story from WHYY's Aaron Mozell.
Dr. Kermit Gosnell was convicted of murder for delivering and then killing three babies inside his West Philadelphia abortion clinic, dubbed by prosecutors a house of horrors. Police removed 47 sets of remains during a grisly investigation that garnered national attention. The so-called Gosnell babies are now buried at Laurel Hill Cemetery in East Falls after being cremated by the city in September 2013. Catherine Glenn Foster is an attorney with Alliance Defending Freedom, a D.C.-based group. She's pleased the proper burial finally happened.
To give these babies in death the dignity that they did not get in life, it's the right thing to do for any child, for any person. It's what a civilized society does, and these babies deserve nothing less.
Still, not everyone in the crowd was completely happy. Reverend Patrick Mahoney directs the Christian Defense Coalition, which repeatedly requested the chance to hold a funeral since the remains went unclaimed by relatives. He says the city refused and didn't tell the public when the burial happened.
We came for months after months seeking these children in love. They were not unclaimed. They were wanted. They were desired. They had meaning and purpose.
A spokesperson with the city medical examiner's office says it's standard procedure to cremate remains that are unclaimed by families and eventually bury them at Laurel Hill. What's more, the city has never before made public announcements when these burials take place. Gosnell is serving a life sentence for his murder convictions. I'm Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
Three Philadelphia lawmakers have pleaded guilty to accepting cash in a corruption investigation and are resigning their state legislative seats. But that doesn't mean taxpayers are finished paying their bills. The plea deals concluded so far will permit the lawmakers to keep their state pensions, as WHYY's Dave Davies explains.
In the sting operation, an informant posing as a lobbyist tape-recorded his meetings with lawmakers, and prosecutors say five of them took cash. So far, three, State Representatives Ron Waters, Harold James, and Michelle Brownlee, have pled guilty. But they're expected to keep their state pensions, and that troubles Eric Epstein of the activist group Rock the Capitol, which has been active on pension issues. He says nearly all those convicted in the corruption cases known as Bonusgate lost their pensions, but there's a troubling trend in more recent cases, such as that of former state senator Leanna Washington.
What's happened recently is we're riding a horse backwards into the wrong century. If you look at the case of Senator Washington, she pled out, kept her pension. Everybody involved in Porngate kept their pension. We need to have a hard stop here.
Why did the plea deals in the sting permit lawmakers to keep their pensions? Mark Gilson, the Philadelphia Assistant District Attorney who handled the cases, says pensions never came up in the plea negotiations.
We never agreed that anyone gets to keep their pension. Ultimately, the decision whether anyone gets to keep their pension is a decision that needs to be made by the State Board of Pensions.
And that's true as far as it goes. But the pension board doesn't have discretion here. State law provides that public officials forfeit their pensions when they're sentenced on certain specific crimes, bribery, extortion, theft, and others. Bill Kostopoulos, a veteran attorney who's handled many public corruption cases, says in plea negotiations, a defendant's pension is a key card to play, and attorneys know which crimes result in the loss of a pension and which don't.
The way it works is the plea agreement is structured in such a way that what the defendant pleads to does not trigger the pension loss.
And that's exactly what happened here. The lawmakers pled guilty to conflict of interest violations in the state ethics code, offenses which don't disqualify you from collecting your pension. Assistant D.A. Gillison notes that the defendants are being punished. They're giving up their seats and political careers and paying thousands in restitution and costs of prosecution. asked why he didn't insist they plead guilty to more serious charges, which would have stripped their pensions and led to jail time. Gilson says plea deals are always judgment calls.
You look at your evidence. You look at the cost of going to trial. There's always uncertainty there. There are a number of factors that the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office takes into consideration when it makes an offer to any defendant, and we obviously did what we felt was appropriate here.
Gilson says it's up to the legislature to require pension forfeiture for Ethics Act violations like those the lawmakers pled to, and Director Rob Caruso says the State Ethics Commission has recommended that to the legislature, but it hasn't gone anywhere. Legal issues aside, is it fair to the lawmakers and their families to yank their retirement plans in these cases? Kostopoulos, the defense attorney, says it depends on the facts in every case, but he isn't troubled by officials who've served honorably for decades keeping their pensions in cases where they accepted a few hundred dollars. Epstein of Rock the Capitol takes a harder line.
If you want to defeat corruption, it's clear. You send white-collar criminals to blue-collar prison, and you take away their pension. And I don't have any empathy when I hear people say they did this, that, and the other thing. No amount of good allows you to do any amount of bad.
Two other lawmakers, Louise Bishop and Vanessa Lowry Brown, have not reached plea deals in their cases and may choose to go to trial. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, accident investigators say the engineer driving the Amtrak train in last month's derailment was not using his cell phone in the moments before the incident, deepening the mystery of a possible cause of the accident. Eight people were killed, some 200 injured in that May 12th derailment. The Pennsylvania House today passed a non-binding resolution condemning Governor Tom Wolf's death penalty moratorium and urged him to reverse it. The resolution also says governors cannot nullify a duly enacted law, reverse a legal verdict, or substitute their own judgment based on their own personal disapproval of the state's legislative process. 83 degrees, partly sunny skies on Independence Mall. It's 618. Tonight's forecast, clear skies, partly cloudy overnight, low 68 degrees. Tomorrow, hot and humid, high 92. There's a 30% chance of late day showers, maybe even a thunderstorm.
Still ahead. Money has taken over politics, and because of that, our agenda is not being addressed. Protest has always been a way that we change the agenda.
A TEDx Philly speaker talks about his big idea as NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. PAFA has an array of art classes and programs for all ages and skill levels this summer, including day camps for kids, pre-college programs for teens, and classes and workshops for adults in drawing, painting, sculpture, printmaking, and more. Workshops include a master class in June with classical realist artist and author Juliet Aristides. Registration now underway for summer classes. For more information, pafa.org/community education.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. The clock is ticking on a $25,000 challenge. We only have until June 15th to receive 1,000 pledges. If we can reach this goal, an anonymous donor will give WHYY an additional $25,000 in memory of Hubert J.P. Schumacher. Every pledge counts, so we need to hear from you right now at WHYY.org. Thanks.
Fox Chase Cancer Center is a proud supporter of WHYY. One of the newest advances in the fight against cancer is immunotherapy, a treatment that unleashes your body's own immune system so it can better fight cancer cells. Early results from studies at Fox Chase and other centers show promise, even in patients who did not respond to other treatments. Part of Temple Health, Fox Chase Cancer Center now offers next business day appointments. Learn more at 888-FOX-CHASE or foxchase.org.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Attendees at tomorrow's TEDx Philly conference will hear from community organizer Fabricio Rodriguez about his efforts as a workers' rights activist in Philadelphia. Mr. Rodriguez, thanks for joining us with a preview.
Great. I'm glad to be here.
First off, what brought you to Philadelphia from the Southwest? And speak also about your firsthand experiences in Alaska that helped first focus you on the importance of change in the workplace.
Great. Yeah, the whole story for me starts when I was an underground miner. I worked underground for several years, about 5 years. At one point, I ended up at a at a mine in rural Alaska. And at that point, I ran into a problem. Me and my father, we worked at the same place, and our employer refused to let us have a lunch break. So we decided we needed to do something about that. I tried to organize my first protest. I would say it didn't work out very well. I lost my job.
When you say organize your first protest, were you trying to organize and unionize your fellow workers?
We weren't trying to form a union. We didn't even know anything about that, or at least I didn't. What we were trying to do was assert our right to take lunch break, all of us, for all the workers. So we tried to go out and have, you know, have a lunch break in defiance of our employer. And because of that, I lost my job, and my father did too sometime after that.
Was the employer in defiance of state or federal law in that regard by denying lunch breaks?
He actually was. But something that I learned in that case is there aren't any rights on paper. The only rights we have are the rights that we take and the rights that we use. So he was in defiance of the law, and we tried to fight it, not very well, and we got terminated.
So how did you use that initial defeat to propel you forward?
Well, I was inspired by the courage that my father had instigated in me and my fellow coworkers. So with that inspiration, I knew I wanted to go back out and help regular, ordinary people learn how to stand up for themselves. So I got out of the industry. I went to college and I studied economics, but more importantly, I learned how to organize.
The essence of the TEDx Philly conference presentation is ideas worth spreading. And with that, is there a single nugget, a specific message you want to impart tomorrow?
Yeah. I came to inform my fellow Philadelphians in the world that the power of protest is extremely powerful, but it's a mode of civic engagement that no one ever tells you about, and they certainly don't encourage you to do it. Right now in our nation's history, I believe that protest is the only thing that can save our democracy.
Is community organizing and protest, as you term it, a first option because of frustrations you've had in trying to go other routes, say through the political or judicial systems?
What we're seeing in our country at this time is decision makers are ignoring the needs of regular people. Money has taken over politics, and because of that, our agenda is not being addressed. Protest has always been a way that we change the agenda.
And so they say all politics is local. Talk about recent challenges and successes and failures in Philadelphia since you've been here.
Yeah, I think a perfect example of how we're seeing a breakdown of our democratic institutions is taking place actually today. So back in May of 2014, 100,000 Philadelphians voted to support the living wage ordinance. It got more votes that year than anything else on the ballot. Despite that, the CEO of American Airlines and U.S. Airlines is lobbying our city council today to carve themselves a loophole and completely overturn that law.
And indeed, if that's successful, to what extent can even civil disobedience help to change things?
Well, we believe that that is always the strongest tool that we have. We always have that to turn to. So if our city council does overturn this law, it would be a tragedy for the 100,000 people that voted in favor of that law. But that doesn't mean our options are over. We can always take to the streets and find new ways to win what we deserve.
Is our conversation in part a way to go to the streets by going to the public over the airwaves?
My call to action to all people of Philadelphia and the world, actually, is that protest is our right. It's a powerful tool. It's extremely effective, and it can be a lot of fun.
Thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thank you so much.
That's community organizer Fabricio Rodriguez. He'll be among the speakers at tomorrow's TEDx Philly conference in Philadelphia. Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need. Our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. A local Major League Soccer booster group forms before there's even a team. Then the very presence of the Sons of Ben helps prompt the league to create the team Philadelphia Union. It sounds too remarkable to be true, but it really happened, and now it's the subject of a new documentary screening in Philadelphia tonight. Our producer, Shai Ben-Yakov, has this preview.
Yes, the story of the Sons of Ben seems beyond belief, and yet somehow, as it was happening through a series of small developments, it felt ordinary, says Corey Ferlin. He's one of the founders of the Sons of Ben. So when he heard that a documentarian wanted to come and tell the son's story...
I kind of laughed them off at first. I was like, no way. You know, kind of, we were just, you know, a bunch of guys hanging out, wanting to have fun. And this guy from Hollywood wants to make a story about it, like, okay, cool, like, I'll believe it when I see it.
In the end, Ferland did see it. He flew to Barcelona for a film festival that screened the documentary, titled, appropriately, Sons of Ben, the Movie.
And we're sitting in this room, and we're watching the film on the screen with people, you know, strangers I've never met before, and after the film, they're like, oh my God, like, this is unbelievable.
Unbelievable and unprecedented, says filmmaker Jeff Bell.
It's a supporters group for a team that didn't exist. That's unique. It's never been done in any professional sports setting. I've looked far and wide to try and find the story or something similar to it.
The trailers include your standard emotionally charged interview clips.
Everybody says, hey, let's start this. And then the idea falls by the wayside. They followed through. What, you're not going to give us a team? I'll tell you what, we're going to show you that soccer can work in this town.
But Bell says one of the most surprising parts of the film was how the Sons of Ben reacted to the Union's stadium being placed in Chester, one of the poorest cities in the country.
Sons of Ben weren't too happy about that, but something changed within them. They're like, look, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen here. Let's make the best of the situation.
We started a charity last year called Help Kick Hunger to benefit residents of Chester.
We knew a stadium was going to be built in Chester. We knew that was going to be our home base.
We had to promote Chester, had to say that it wasn't a bad place to be.
To show them we are happy to be their neighbors and said, hey, we're here to help. What can we do?
Sons of Ben, the movie, is playing tonight at the Trocadero and the Ritz East Theater in Philadelphia. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov, WHYY News.
And finally this evening, if you're looking for something to do tomorrow night, round up your wildling friends and join the Game of Thrones trivia night at the Victoria Freehouse.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Not only do you have a chance to prove that you do know something, but you can finally show off your collection of Khaleesi outfits.
When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. There is no middle ground.
Except tomorrow night, when prizes will be given to the first and second place winners, as well as best costume. The event starts at 7. Refreshments will be offered, inspired by foods described in George R.R. Martin's books, including a red wedding punch and blackbird pie. Hey, we apologize if you have no idea what we're talking about. We're talking about closing down tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. When an energy pipeline is built, state governments decide what gets taxed and who gets the money. Tomorrow, we'll look at one pipeline and the big differences in revenue it yields as it crosses state borders. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Abington Health supports WHYY and understands that a lung cancer diagnosis can turn your world upside down. Abington Health's lung cancer team is dedicated to putting your mind and your world at ease. With advanced diagnostics like endobronchial ultrasound and important treatment options like stereotactic body radiosurgery, plus minimally invasive surgery and genomic testing of tumor tissue, Abington Health can create a treatment plan just for you. Learn more at abingtonhealth.org.